2,000 years ago, during the first pre-Christian century, the scholar Hillel broke ground for what we now call Rabbinic Judaism. Until his day, Jewish life was governed by the specific rules and regulations of the biblical law, and by a body of law which was of some antiquity and which was passed down by word of mouth from teacher to student, from jurist to young lawyer. There was no principle of growth. There was no elbow room for the development of Judaism so that it could adjust to changing social and economic situations. Hillel pioneered what I like to call constitutional Judaism. Hillel looked upon the Bible much as we look upon our own constitution, as a document of basic principles which must be respected, but as a document of infinite depth and dimension, from which by a correct logic, by common sense and by interpretation, those skilled in the law can draw out the rule for their day. Hillel was, in a sense, Justices Holmes and Brandeis rolled into one. He gave Jewish life flexibility, living room, and he assured at the same time to Jewish life continuity, that the basic forms, the familiar traditions, the respect for the individual, the emphasis on this life and on the service of God, that all these fundamental elements of our tradition would remain significant, though a ritual here and a specific form there might necessarily be changed. If we were to list the classic reformers of Jewish life, those men who more than any other had set Judaism on its modern course, Hillel would necessarily stand preeminent among them. But it is not to Hillel the jurist, that I would turn your attention this morning. I would speak of Hillel the man, and I would present him to you as you might be presented to another generation, as a man of more than ordinary parts, who wrestled with one of the common and familiar problems of life: how to maintain his simplicity, his integrity, in a corrosive and corrupting age. How to maintain his dignity and his decency in a greedy, in a grabbing society. Hillel was born at about the time that Pompey took over the kingdom of Palestine and made it a Roman province. During his lifetime, the armies of Rome, the armies of Pompey and of Crassus and of Caesar, and later the armies of Octavius and Antony, marched and countermarched through the land, ravishing and pillaging as their generals sought the royal purple. And when they left, the Palestinians were wont to say that there was not a blade of wheat left standing in the field. There was not an animal left alive in their pens. This was a time of devastation, of constant warfare. And as counterpoint to these warfares, these battles for empire, there were the minor yet bloody and brutal battles between Jewish patricians, Israelite noblemen who were scrambling for power to rule in the name of Rome. We celebrated last week the holiday of Hanukkah. Hanukkah celebrates Jewish independence, the establishment of the second Jewish commonwealth, the establishment of the rule of the Hasmonean family, the descendants of the Maccabees. During the 60s of the first pre-Christian century, the last of the Hasmoneans fought among themselves rule and they destroyed much of Israel in the process. And then during the 50s, a Jewish convert, an Idumean by the name of Antipater, overthrew the Hasmoneans, wiped out the remainder of the family, and established the rule of his house. And he and his son Herod ruled dictatorially and cruelly over Israel for the remainder of the century. This was a police state. Bribery was open. The courts expropriated the land of the small farmers to add it to the crown land. Taxes were sent to Caesar, and the taxes were heavy, but more taxes remained in the hands of the patricians, in the hands of Herod. Herod was a murderous man. He murdered his wife. He murdered two of his sons. He murdered all of his brothers and sisters. When the Sanhedrin opposed his dictates, 45 of them were summarily executed. When the high priest became too popular, his palace guard had him drowned in the Jordan. This is the background of the life of Hillel, a time of chaos, of turbulence, and of violence, and of unrest in the cities of Jerusalem and of Judea. You know, in Hellenistic times, in Greek Jewish times, the cities had been rather peaceful. The differences between the very wealthy and the very poor were not as broad, and as there was not such a chasm as there had once been. In Roman times, this chasm widened. The patricians became like little gods with their retinues of courtiers. They were above the law. They could expropriate whatever they wanted. If a man was in their debt and he defaulted, he was sold into slavery. There was conspicuous consumption, license, luxury. But these were the very few. The artisan, the craftsman, the middle class were impoverished. Rome meant slavery, and slavery meant that the free man could not sell his skills for hire because a slave could do it more cheaply. And so the middle class was impoverished, and the poor were driven further into their poverty. They became a mob, the lumpen proletariat, an indistinguishable mass. This is Hillel's age. And his problem, how does one become a man, set a course, a useful and meaningful course for his life, when all around there is darkness and confusion? The first we know of Hillel is as a young graduate student in the academy of two well-known Pharisaic teachers, Shemaiah and Avtalion. The story of the young student Hillel is well known. How he worked all day as a woodcutter in order to earn the admission fee to these academic lectures, in order to provide for his wife and for his children. For even in those days, the young people married and had families before they had their degrees. One day, Hillel was ill. He could not go out into the hills around Jerusalem to gather the wood. He had not the fee for admission. But he would not lose the continuity of the lectures. And he climbed up, as you'll recall, to the roof of the hall, the lecture hall. He lay down prone across the skylight. He remained there so long that he was paralyzed by the cold, and he was saved only because one of the lecturers looked up and saw the shadow of a man on the skylight and had Hillel brought down and revived. And hopefully he was given a free scholarship, free admission from then on to the lectures. Now many a young Jew from the East Side was encouraged by this story when he set out for college with high hopes, but with probably less than the price of a bus ticket to the campus in his pocket. If Hillel could support his wife and his family by cutting wood, by earning 14 cents a day, surely by busing tables, by working in a department store, he could put himself through college. Hillel's indefatigable zeal for learning, his persistence and perseverance, is paradigmatic of Israel's traditional concern and love for and veneration of learning. Learning is part of the secret of Jewish survival. You know, There are two kinds of poverty. There is the hovel, which is dismal, dank, dark. And those who live in it are cramped together. This is their close quarters. There's little room for anyone. There is little physical dignity in these surroundings. And for some, the only escape is in sudden violence and soddenness and drunkenness. And there is a hovel where all is dank and dismal and where people live cramped together and crowded. And there are none of the physical amenities of life. And yet there is a certain lightness and dignity to this home, because in it, the mind is alert. It soars beyond the four narrow circumscribing walls, across the face of the earth, across the seas, into the heavens. Literally, learning is the light, is the encouragement, is the grace of this living. And so learning has always graced our Jewish exile, whether it be impoverished or in abundance. For it has given to our lives dimension, excitement, purpose, charm. It has literally saved the dignity of our people. And when Hillel was later to teach, Hamarbe Torah, Marbe Chayim, the more Torah, the more life, he meant it quite literally. The more a man is aware of his world, the more knowledge that he has mastered about his surroundings, the more he is aware of the multi-dimensions of his existence, the more he lives. The animal knows only the little narrow plot in which he hunts and feeds and builds his den or his lair. The man of learning knows the world. He has mined its depths. He has soared into the heaven. He has explored the peoples. He is excited by the many ideas, the color, the harmonies, the beauties of life. And so Hillel was to say, the man who does not study deserves to die. Indeed, he is though living, as if he be dead. How Hillel would have wondered at some of our young people. Here he had to expend every energy that he possessed to earn the money to go to school. And now there are these beautiful schools. All is public and free. There are those who deliberately daydream, who are callously indifferent. They put their hands behind their heads. They gaze into the heavens. The learning passes them by as if it has not been spoken. He would have wondered at these sons of his people, for whom all is provided, but who lack the simple understanding that without learning, though they be alive, it is as if they are dead. But Hillel's learning, his unquenchable thirst for education, his willingness to accept the indignity of work as a woodcutter in order to provide his scholarship to the university cannot be understood simply as a child's story. The interesting thing about this poverty and this determination of Hillel's is that it was a self-imposed discipline. The Talmud tells us that Hillel was blessed with a brother who was a very successful silk merchant. His name was Shebna. And the brothers were close. And Shebna offered Hillel a scholarship, full tuition, all that he needed to provide for his wife and his children and for his books and for his admission fees. And Hillel turned him down, graciously and thankfully, but he turned him down. Now the Bible, the Talmud does not tell us why Hillel refused this most generous offer. But it does tell us that Hillel quoted to his brother a line from the Bible, from the Song of Songs, which reads, "If a man give all the wealth of his home for love, he will be utterly scorned. If a man give all the wealth of his home for love, he will be utterly scorned. Love cannot be bought. Love is an experience. Love is awareness. Love comes only in relation to other human beings. You cannot learn of love by reading all the manuals of psychology or physiology. You must feel it, be intimate with it, live it. And what is true of love is true of wisdom. For the school in which Hillel was enrolled was not simply a technical school where you learned a mass of information to make you competent in a given profession. It was a school of Torah, of Judaism. And Judaism is not simply a theology, a philosophy, a history, a law. It is an awareness. It is a basis for judgment. It is a way of life. And Hillel instinctively knew that if he moved from the sheltered existence of his childhood into the shelter of the ivory tower, and then into the professional competence of a jurist, he would lack something, some awareness, some sensitivity to man, which he needed in order to be effective as a human being. Hillel reminds me of some of our young people today who deliberately put on the clothes of the poor, and who during the summer vacations or taking a year or two off from their education go out into the center city, live in the tenements, join the Peace Corps. They sense instinctively that to know, to mature, they must touch bedrock. That if you want to wage a war on poverty, you must first know what it is that the poor need, how they feel, how they think, how they respond. That before you judge another man, the stumblings, the lack of initiative of the poor, you yourself must have drunk of the cup of bitterness. You yourself must know what it means to be hopeless and constantly frustrated, to lack the simple amenities of life. Hillel set out to understand what life is all about. He had no patience with the suave, quick judgment of the very bright, who learn all that is to be known about sociology and about philosophy and about political science, who are prepared with all manner of panacea for the social problems of the day, but who do not understand what it is that makes a single life. Why men respond as they do. Why men are not integers who can be simply shuffled and reshuffled to the convenience of some social planner. Hillel placed himself in a tenement, in a menial profession. He placed his family in a position of want so that he too might know what life is. He too might know what it means to be stripped of security, to be without status, to be hungry, to be penniless. Schooling can give you the facts, the basis for judgment, but not the grace, the wisdom which is the mark of a truly wise man. Hillel sought that wisdom. And that is a wisdom that can be found only in the living, only by experience, only by exposing yourself to the cruel, chilling winds of life. And it made a great difference, this experience in Hillel's life. Many a story is told in our Talmud where Hillel opposes the general consensus of the rabbis, and he opposes them because of his knowledge of what it means to be frail and weak and poor. What higher virtue is there than truth? The rabbis taught that if a scholar is not on the inside as he is on the outside, he has no place in the house of study. Let your yes, they said, be a true yes. Let your no be a true no. No one can disagree. One of the young scholars placed this problem before his teacher. You teach us to be truthful, and yet you go to the wedding festivities of your friends, and it's the custom at these festivities to sing songs of praise for the beauty of the bride and for the glory of her wedding dress and her garment. And with typical Oriental enthusiasm, these praises are fulsome and exaggerated. The bride can be quite plain. The dress may not fit. How can you sing, my teacher, these songs? And so one teacher came along and he said, the bride must be described in these poems as she is. Let not a scholar be overly enthusiastic. And the scholars began to leave the wedding feasts. Hillel came along and he said, not so. She must be praised for the beauty of her love. Let her be known as she thinks herself to be. Life is bruising and gray. And when you are plain, there are few moments of full happiness. And when you are poor, there are few moments of undiluted joy. This is the truth. You must allow people to rejoice in life and not to deny them their few moments of pleasure. Once a scholar was given by one who had been pleased by his wisdom a very fine, well-shaped calf. And he announced to his students that he would not slaughter the calf until the Sabbath. It would be the Sabbath meal for him. And the students came to Hillel and said, what a fine example of religious piety this is. Here our teacher is holding over the calf, will not slaughter the calf until the Sabbath. Would that all Israel would follow his example. Hillel shook his head. And he quoted to them a verse from the Psalms which reads, blessed be the Lord, day by day he beareth our burden. Let man serve God in love with his fellow men day by day and enjoy each day. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. You do not know, my children, what it means to live in the crowded streets. A child may die of malnutrition before the Sabbath comes. The animal may sicken. The animal may be stolen. Let the poor enjoy what they need now. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It was not that Hillel loved the Sabbath less, but that poverty had taught him to love man the more. Hillel was not only a genius among jurists, but a saint in a pious and saintly people. But you know, even the saint needs a vacation. There are times when you are used and used and used again, and you're ultimately used up. There are times when this world gets to you, it becomes a rat race. The frenzy wears you down. You lose your temper. You are no longer gentle, sympathetic. You're no longer willing to listen. The people are something that beats in on you and you want to be free. You've all felt that. And some there be who retreat to their ivory towers, and some there be who immure themselves behind monastery walls, and most of us simply close the doors of our home and throw ourselves into an orgy of reading. And some simply pack their valise and leave for a few weeks. Hillel, too, found that life was beating him down. And so he simply disappeared from Jerusalem. He was no longer to be seen at the academy. He went out into the wilderness. And he joined there one of these small communities of the ascetic, of the pious, community of spiritual discipline and of study. He went to seek his soul, much as Schweitzer went to seek his soul in Africa, and Burton has gone into a monastery to find his. He went to find his soul in one of those little communities like that of the Dead Sea Covenant people, which has been uncovered in our own day. We know much about these communities today. This is the first principle of the community of Qumran. This is the regulation for the men of the community who devote themselves to turn away from every evil, to hold fast to everything which God has commanded as his pleasure. They shall separate themselves from the assembly of the men of deceit. They shall be a community with Torah study. The wilderness was Hillel's Walden Pond. He lived there for a number of years, seeking steadfastness, seeking his soul, seeking to find balance, seeking to find that unending inner strength which alone leads a man to a life of continuing service, which alone frees him from moments of anger, of frustration, of bitterness, and of fear. And he seems to have found in the wilderness what he sought himself. When he returned to the larger world, his patience, his gentleness was proverbial. There's a story told in the Talmud about two Sophisticates who decided that they could ruffle the feathers of Hillel. And they made a bet of $100 that they could make Hillel angry. It was Friday afternoon. Hillel was preparing himself for the Sabbath. He was deep in study, in his study, and there was a knock on the door. And one of the young blades presented himself, and Hillel welcomed him courteously and had him sit down and listen to him patiently. And the young man asked him the most stupid question in the world. And Hillel gave a long and patient answer, and the young man left. Hillel went back to his studies. 10 minutes later, the young man was again at the door. He was welcomed, invited to sit down, courteously listened to. Again, a question more stupid than the first. And again, Hillel gave him a courteous and full response. The young man left. A third time, and a fourth. And finally, when he had been answered so gently by this scholar, this busy man, four times, when these very stupid questions had been explained to him, the young man burst out, "May there be no other like you in Israel." And Hillel said, "Why?" The young man said, "Because I've lost a month's wages because I couldn't get you angry." And Hillel said, "Better to take the month's wages and to spend them for a year's tuition to the academy. There you'll learn what is truly worth the knowing." Hillel's patience became proverbial. And he spent, when he returned to life, the better part of a long career teaching to Jews what we call chesed, the principle of loving kindness, to deal with other men as you would have them deal with you. Hillel then is a scholar saint. Hillel, like all of us, had these moments of frustration. Better than most of us, he knew that when the world is too much for us, withdraw, retreat, turn in on yourself. Don't just keep going, wasting your energies, wasting your strength. Withdraw for a while. Find yourself. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? Imein ani li mili. If I don't watch after my own soul, no one else will watch over it for me. And if it is corrupted, there is no healing. But he also learned in the wilderness that this is luxury. That we need silence and quiet and privacy, but too much silence and too much privacy is selfishness. For if I am for myself alone, what am I? If I don't go back into the world, if I am not part of the action and the passion of my age, it's as if I have never lived. I've abstracted myself from the world. Never permanently separate yourself from the community. You have responsibilities to your home, to your family, to your community, to your nation, and these cannot be shrugged off simply because you are concerned with your soul. And if you would understand why Judaism never exalted monasticism, here is the answer. That the Hillels of our people knew instinctively that you cannot care that much for your soul that you withdraw yourself entirely from life. Indeed, that you deny something to your soul if you deny it the relationships which are so important in life. Hillel, like a teacher Christianity, whose birthday will be observed next week, was fond to teach in parables. Hillel once told of a young rose bush, very resplendent in its colors, growing under a large, old, gnarled apple tree. And the buds of the rose bush were preening themselves to each other. Where have you seen such color like mine? Notice my fragrance. There's none like it in the world. Look at that old beaten up apple tree up there. Those plain leaves, those spreading branches, ugly and misshapen. And look at us. And the apple tree replied, "True, there is beauty to you, but you are young. And you have not yet learnt how to give man your blossom without drawing his blood with your thorns. If a man takes a stone and throws it at me, I give him my apples." Hillel, through his learning, through his retreat, through his discipline, through experience, Hillel learned to be like the apple tree, to have the steadfastness, to give to men of his learning, of his counsel, of his guidance, whether they thanked him or no, whether they approved of his teaching or not, whether they praised him or whether they threw stones at him. This is the wisdom of age and the wisdom of experience. And perhaps this is the answer ultimately to the question which Hillel faced, as many of us do all our lives. How can I find myself, my dignity, my innocence, my simplicity, in a corrosive and corrupting world? Learn what life is all about. Not simply what's in the books, but what life is all about. Live. And when life is too much for you, withdraw. Find God, find perspective, find your soul. Having found it, return. Return to live in the habitations of men, strong in your conviction of what is right and necessary, unperturbed by the compliments or the objections, by the praise or the blame of others, walking a straight line, walking the line which your soul sets for you. When Hillel died, he was mourned by Israel as the gentle one, the man of wisdom, the man who had left life to the living. And if we too want to add to the store of life of those with whom we live, we could do far worse than to follow his example.